Hey, everybody. Welcome to Throwing Wrenches Podcast. This is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott. Welcome to the automotive podcast that's hunting for lost cats.
On this episode of Throwing Wrenches,
we have an industry expert in the room. Who, oh, who could it be?
Oh, who? Elon is making news. Okay, we'll play along.
And Volvo is selling straight to consumers. Are you buying?
All that and more on this episode of Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Hey man, was that a new theme song?
Oh, that is a shout out to De La Soul. Not only did they just show up on iTunes and Spotify because they somehow settled all their lawsuits for sampling music, but then one of the members died this week. So shout out to them.
That's too bad. That's too bad.
It's no Shania Twain, but it's close.
Yeah, it's close. She has a new album. I heard it. It's terrible.
Oh,
don't get it.
Is it just, I mean, are you a hater? Or
no,
honestly give it a listen?
It's very, somebody put derivative of everything. It sounds like Taylor Swift got put in a blender and then got watered down. Love you, Shania.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like you love her that much.
No.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. To join the fun of the show, just make sure you send in an email to info@throwingwrenches.com. I did not check reviews. We had so many reviews last time that I was satiated. So obviously...
You were fat and happy, rubbing your belly like, yes, finally.
The reviews are in.
Satiated. And,
yeah.
How do you spell that?
Yeah. I have a word of the day dictionary. Hey, for those of you in the room who don't recognize the tones of the industry expert... that would be our good friend Regan is joining the show.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Yeah.
We do need to tone down the expert rhetoric, though.
I mean, oh, really? Is that too strong of a word to throw around?
Probably. I mean, I am a member of the Five Timers Club now, which I'm proud to say.
And yeah.
I'm honored that you guys would keep having me back. But I think I've proven the point over the years.
Have you? What is that point, by the way?
That I'm not an expert?
Oh, no. That's why we keep having you back. Hey, if you don't know my co-host, Daryl Scott, he's a romanticist. Serrano de Bergerac would be aghast to see him installing tires on his classic car this past Valentine's Day when he could be whispering sweet nothings into the ears of the fair Sarah. Instead, he has the nicest wife in the world. He's Daryl Scott.
Oh, boy, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was our Valentine's gift to one another.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
White wall tires, which, it's a gift that keeps on giving. And much more expensive than a Whitman sampler from the Walgreens, by the way.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
All right. So if you haven't been too familiarized yet with my co-host, customer service is the name of his game. He also likes other games, unless we're talking about Head Games by rock band Foreigner, straight off the charts from the mid-70s, which he does not like. He doesn't like Foreigner. He's hot-blooded and somehow cold as ice. He's Mr. Eric Stahl.
Wow. I hate Foreigner, by the way. So I love the reference.
Nice.
I know all those songs because that was my youth.
Dun.
Yes.
Good stuff.
You're cold as ice.
Get the piano.
Do you guys write those every time?
Every time.
Yeah.
They're so awesome.
They are
awesome.
So
good.
But if you don't know Regan Bull, well, a bomb threat cannot sway this guy from booking a room in downtown Peoria to hang out with us for the show.
I came back.
He's our corporate liaison in the world of big automotive. Want your aspiring technician to get a job in the industry? He's your man. Let's talk text, baby.
Thank you. Thanks again.
Excellent. And bomb threat, just for the folks at home who are concerned, everything's fine.
Yeah. Fine. No, I survived the bomb threat. Everybody survived the bomb threat. It was just that a threat.
Yeah, just it's the type of the quality hotel that Regan chooses to stay in because he likes those Marriott points. Occasionally, one of them in Peoria gets multiple bomb threats throughout the year.
It's the risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah. They did apprehend that guy.
I was so hoping it was just a guy who didn't want to come into work that day. You were there during like a Monsanto convention, so I was hoping maybe there was like some people dressed up like cows with blood all over them, like laying on the pavement. But
as I sat unshowered in my truck that morning after evacuating down 8 flights of stairs, which was only 8.
Smell like urine?
No, but I did think like this might have something to do
not
with
you,
Monsanto.
The stairs.
Oh, okay.
he was showering.
I didn't have the shower yet that morning, so I could see where Eric was coming from. But I did think of the conspiracy thing, absolutely. Like,
a little bit.
There's a lot of Monsanto people here.
As I put my tinfoil hat in the parking lot, No, it's good. I'm glad you're still here and not Thank blown you. To pieces.
No, so. Peoria's finest took care of me that morning, as well as every other patron of that
did
hotel.
Did they cover you with like a trauma blanket or anything like that?
No, they just let me sit in my truck outside the hotel.
Okay. I mean, that would have been awesome, too.
They let me be in my truck and listen to the radio. That's all I
Regan's needed. Drinking a cup of coffee from a styrofoam cup, covered with a solar blanket.
Looking like John McClane at the end of Die Hard. EMS workers everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
If it happens again, yeah. That's where I'm going with this.
Absolutely. Cool. I love it. Love it. All right. Where are we at on the sucker here? So anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for commenting everything. I even boosted this last ad
for the
last show. And then a lot of people commented that they knew people who fell out of the backs of trucks and died. And they even named individuals who maybe slid off of banana leaves or something on a truck. Did you see that?
The pickup trucks?
Yes.
No, because we referenced that.
Yes.
The Illinois legislation banning that or whatever.
Yeah, so
good mail, but strange mail.
Yeah, it was some creepy stuff. They even named the guy who died. He's like, his dad packed the whole back of the truck with palm fronds, and he was sitting on the back, and the palm fronds slid out, but he lived when he fell off, but then a car drove over, and I'm like, oh, man.
Did we delete that post?
No, I mean, it's still there, and that could be a listener. I'm not trying to make light, but
No.
I just wanted to know if you could, like, hang in the back of your truck with your arm hanging out. Now, obviously, if you're sitting on a pile of palm fronds, I wouldn't even sit on my roof if it were a pile of palm fronds. Why would I sit in the back of a truck, right?
Well, different strokes for different folks. And also, like, we were talking about this. My wife and I were talking about, she grew up in the country and talked about, like, guys walking down the grain and getting stuck in the grain elevator or the silos or whatever.
That's a classic.
There are certain things that if you grew up with that, you're like, you don't even think about, like, this might, hold on a second, this might be dangerous. Yeah. So, I mean, Lord knows. So, no disrespect. I need to go back and look at that post because I missed all that. Back and forth.
All that scariness.
Yeah, a little bit. No new reviews. Are we still at 34 reviews on
Apple
Podcast?
You know what? I have to apologize. So we changed our channel a little bit. And so for those who have not been following along, who aren't Patreon subscribers, maybe they didn't hear the news on this, I did add the option for Apple Podcast Premium. It's a new service that Apple's allowed. There have been some people in the past who said, I really want to do the pre-show. I want to listen to some of this stuff. But I don't really care to spend $5 or $10 a month because I don't care for coasters with Daryl's face on it or keychains or stickers or, Volvo stickers. Whoa. Those are the best damn coasters ever, by the way.
They are awesome. I have some, as well as some of the Scott Auto Museum stickers.
Yeah.
They
quality.
Get, yes.
Yeah, it quality is quality. Quality first. That's been my motto. But should you not want swag, and you just want to hear some of these awesome pre-shows, like the hour and 20 minutes we just recorded before this, then you can go to Apple Premium Podcast and sign up for $2.99 a month. It's a bargain. And just get you some of that pre-show. Right now, there's three pre-shows on there. We'll be adding all the back pre-shows from Patreon on there. So just hop in there if you want to do it. It's great.
I might actually go back and listen.
All right. It's like the Disney Vault, but worse.
Yes.
Yeah,
because it's definitely not always about cars. I don't even know what we talked about in that last episode.
Like tonight?
We talked a little bit about the Super Bowl. We talked about Jay Leno.
We talked about getting really sketchy pizza at a late night Peoria establishment.
Yes, we talked about hoops, maybe leaving Peoria. There was some great talk. So if you're in for that, then definitely tune in to the premium feed.
You bet. A quick thank you also to our Patreon supporters who make the pre-show possible, as well as help support this wonderful program, bring you high-quality, high-definition audio with these lovely Shure microphones and our Zoom mixer. Not to be confused with the Zoom Mazda stuff. This is not a Mazda mixer. It's actually made by a company called Zoom, and if you're getting into podcasts, you'll know how great that is. And Zoom, if you want to sponsor the show and send us some free gear, we'll take that too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Speaking of sponsors,
hey, our one awesome, been there forever sponsor has been Fort's Toyota Pekin. You can find them on the web at www.toyota-pekin.com. Toyota-Pekin has had some pretty cool cars come in lately. I think we had a delivery truck with 10 cars show up last week. I think I just saw an email here earlier, like another 5 cars just showed up tonight. So cars are coming in. We have inventory. And I tell you what, like when a Sienna shows up, it's gone instantly. There are cars that are coming in. If there's something you're looking for, make sure you talk to one of your favorite salespeople to get in line for that.
You got any of them Sequoias?
We've had a couple Sequoias come in. I tell you what, the last one, it was a gray limited. It wasn't spoken for. And then a local man from Pekin came in and bought it. And it was gray. It was with all the black and silver trim. Gorgeous vehicle.
Nice looking.
Yeah, it was a nice truck.
They did a good job with that. Have you gotten a GR Corolla yet?
No.
I've had a couple people ask about that.
I've also had, I've read an article today that in Australia they're making dealers actually qualify that they should actually get the GR Corolla at their store.
I can't comment on the inventory or limits as such, yeah. But they aren't exactly going to be like rare birds. You know, they're going to be around, but if you, as Ferris Bueller once said, yeah. If you get the chance,
it's choice.
It's choice.
I highly recommend picking one up.
I highly recommend picking one up.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, Fort's Toyota Pekin. We totally appreciate you guys helping us out over the years and keeping support of the show.
Toyota-Pekin.com, 15 minutes from everywhere, and just nice people to do business with.
And if you go to @FortsToyota on Instagram, you'll see that Annalisa posts a picture of me doing a gun show on her Instagram feed the other day.
I saw that.
So yeah.
The best comment, by the way, gun show, not like an actual gun show.
I got excited for the wrong reasons.
Like the like the muscle bound, like making a, you know, flexing your bicep a la Popeye. The best comment on that was, are the tickets to the show discounted?
Ouch.
Based on the size of Eric's biceps.
Is that my mom?
No. Was it?
It might have been.
It might have been.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Mom.
All right. We'll check in the reviews maybe during the show. But everybody who pitched in last time, thanks for viewing. And Patreon members all got stuff in the mail coming this last week. If you did a review, I think Daryl sent out some stickers, so those will be on the way as well.
You bet. Appreciate that.
We start off every show with projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, you know, as everybody knows, I've been coming and going. I got busy stuff, but I got a project. I got Little Mule.
I saw it when we pulled up. Mm-hmm. Regan and I carpooled because we're efficient and we care about the environment.
I was so happy. You guys came out to the compound. You did cover his head so he doesn't know where he's going, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was True Lies style.
Yeah, it's this is my first time here at the compound. I'm honored to be here. I have no idea how I got here or how I'm getting out of here.
Good.
Thank you,
Daryl. You can't find your way back.
I didn't get dinner, but I've been given plenty of beer.
That's good. It's like a dinner. Yeah. But no, Little Mule is sitting out front, sitting proud up on those nice rims and tires.
You know what's funny about that is I'm not a big fan of the big rims and tires I put on it. And this is separate from the project. I put in Aiden's 275s on it, and it's a stock suspension truck. It's a 96 Tacoma, just a base model, regular cab, 5-speed,
mm-hmm.
4-cylinder, but it had those little dinky, what we call pizza cutters on it before. So I put the oversized tires on it, and it drags the power down.
It takes a while.
Oh, God. It's
get
and
up
I think
to
I
speed.
I even smelled the clutch burn the other day as I was trying to kind of move around the pasture. But the thing is, I was driving in the pasture. I was doing a bunch of sticks and chainsawing some trees.
Yeah.
And the frost kind of broke, so I was kind of muddy.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have been driving those pizza cutters, I might have been stuck in my pasture. So those big tires, I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe in the wintertime, I leave the big tires on it, and then the spring and summer, I put the narrow tires on it because it drives so much better with the smaller tires.
Is that like the equivalent, like the 4x4 equivalent of loud pipe save lives? Like, oh, there's a reason I got to have these 35s.
Right.
Ask Willys in the 40s Jeeps, in the military. Those were awfully skinny.
They were.
They were little pizza cutters.
Yeah. Well, because you can get so much torque and spin on those things. You know, your 1-to-1 ratio, I mean, you're just like, you're spinning like crazy, and it's not affecting the engine. You're not bogging the vehicle down. Whereas with those big tires, the horsepower and everything's working. Mm-hmm. It's pushing so much resistance all the way up through the clutch and the engine. So,
so when are you putting a clutch in it?
Yeah.
Well, seriously. It's coming.
I thought about it. And so the reason I got into Little Mule was in the conversation about projects was I saw something hanging under the truck. I'm like, ooh, that's new. What is that? And I looked, and it's fuel tank straps hanging. There's two fuel tank straps on a Tacoma. There's a front and a rear.
Yeah.
And the front one broke. And guess what? The front one is discontinued by Toyota. So,
what are you going to do?
Well, I mean,
ratchet strap and some.
No, I refuse to do the ratchet strap. But, you know, there's all kinds of, like, what, just banding you can do with
You can get galvanized plumber strapping
or
something.
That's probably what I'll do. I don't drive the truck that much. It's not like I need to worry about driving across country.
The ratchet straps are probably a really good option.
Probably not.
The nylon strap.
But they look hideous. When you see somebody driving around with a ratchet strap, like blue or red underneath.
Zip tie it up and put some flat black on it and get out of the way.
There you go. I'll just spray it with some undercoat and it'll know the difference.
Rattle can rebuild.
Yeah.
It works. Yeah. I bet you can probably find, is there not enough aftermarket support for something like that?
There should be something.
I don't think there is, honestly, which seems crazy to me. You'd think that there'd be somebody making those straps. I mean, what is that strap? It's literally a one-inch band of steel with a ring at the end. It's nothing much.
No. What's that company that makes like all the cheap reproduction tanks? Spectra? You go online for like $99. You can buy like in Rock Auto. Like, yeah, I get a fuel tank for whatever. But it's also like, it's basically a Pepsi can that they just, you know. Sure, we make a setting unit. It's like $2.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I trust this. But you might be able to find some aftermarket stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So I lopped down a tree this last week. So I had to get Little Mule out for it. And God, I love that truck. I just love that truck.
It looks great, too. The tires are perfect. It's perfect. When me and Daryl drove up, we both commented. It looks fun. It's proportioned right.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's factory suspension with big tires. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? Remember like the Flintstones? Remember Bam Bam?
Yeah.
Like a little bruiser with a giant club and a loincloth. That's what that truck is.
Yeah, it is.
That, I mean, Little Mules, it's
we
a
just
cute
don't,
name,
we just don't make trucks like that anymore.
No,
it sucks.
We don't.
No.
You're right, Daryl. It's cute, but could do some damage.
It can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What kind of tree? What kind of tree are you hauling?
I mean, I knocked down, it was a 50-foot, it was at least maybe 70-foot. It was a giant tree. It was poplar. It weighs like 2 pounds, but
still,
it was great. And I had my tractor, and we had the whole thing going. It was, my buddy came over to help me. He goes, "You got the best toys." I felt like Batman, I got.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
I had my steel chainsaw, and I got Little Mule, and I got my tractor out there. And,
nice.
And then my recovery kit that I won at Southern Cruiser Crawl years ago, I've never used, and Jake Irish tried to buy from me after the raffle. I'm like, no, I'll use it. I use that recovery kit to help pull down the tree, because that's the first time I've ever pulled that thing out to use it. Sorry, Jake.
Well,
I should have sold it to you, but I used it once now.
Give him a couple bucks off. It's been used. Yeah, it's not new in box anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was happy to find out that my son left it out in the yard, so it got rained on the next day. So, after I asked him to help me pick stuff up.
What was he using it for?
Well, I just asked him to help me pick stuff up.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just laying there. My wife goes, "Did Aiden help you?" Yeah, well, it's out in the yards in the mud. I'm like, okay, that's great.
Perfect.
You can be that dad that yells at the kid for not putting my tools away.
Yeah, my tools. Yeah, yeah.
Been there. Yeah, we can make a whole podcast.
That's
right?
A whole thing.
Yeah, that's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah. From the two guys, no kids. That should be great.
No, I just remember physically.
This might be why you don't have kids.
But my dad had some nice tools, and you had to treat them right.
How many times did you leave them out where he was like upset with you?
Maybe once or twice I can remember. Yeah.
It was like two times.
Otherwise, that was going to be it. Yeah.
Put it back where you got it. Yeah. And after like the second time of seeing flames shoot out of his eyes I was like, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Same set of tools, by the way, that are still sitting in his garage, not really being used. And he's like, "Do you want to take any of these home?" I'm like, "No, you might need them." Like, I'm trying not to take my dad's nice craft. He's got the old school Craftsman, and he's got like the drawers, and they're organized. They got the little felt, And like, there's still part of me like, I don't want to take those because I still think he might yell at me. You know what I mean?
Well, see, my dad has done the same thing. He's offered me like, "I don't need this. You can take this." But also growing up, as I started acquiring my own tools and getting my own place to live and even using my tools to make a living, he would still go through my toolbox when he was coming to visit, like, "That's mine." "It's not yours, Dad." "Yeah, it is. I haven't seen that ratchet in years. That's my ratchet." "That's not your ratchet, Dad.
I loaned that to you 10 years
ago. Exactly. Yeah. So he's going to come visit later this month, and he will still do that.
Do you take inventory of Aiden's stuff, that he borrows?
What's funny is my mom came over while we were out of town, and she was helping to clean the house, and she called me up, and we were talking. She goes, "Hey, by the way, those meat scissors I lost like 30 years ago, I found them in your bathroom." I said, "Yeah, I trimmed my hair with them." And she
loved that band, Meat Scissors.
She's so mad. But they're classic. I've had these scissors.
Meat puppets.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was.
Different group, but similar genre.
Yeah. No.
Do you seriously have meat scissors?
They're beautiful black-handled scissors, and I'll trim my sideburns up.
Was your mom a butcher?
I didn't know there was such a thing as meat scissors.
No.
After the show. Let's...
All right.
I actually want to see Eric give himself a haircut later. That's a post show.
Yeah. That was my nickname in high school.
That's great. That is so funny.
Anyway, that's enough about me. What's going on in the Scott Auto Museum in North Peoria?
Nothing really exciting.
Tires.
Yeah, I had some old tires on my 55 Plymouth.
And, you romanticist, as I said.
Yeah. I decided to take the plunge, and instead of buying flowers or candy, my wife and I said, let's buy each other something really nice that we can use, reproduction white wall tires for our 55 Plymouth. Because flat tires apparently are not good to have on a car. So we had a set of, they were old Coker Classic Bias Ply Reproduction black walls of a BF Goodrich Silvertone radio, bias ply tire. And
I don't know the difference, but go for it.
It's like an old school. It's what the car would have come with. It's a reproduction version of what was there. Yeah. It wasn't just like, you know, some, you know, like fire.
You're a purist. Okay.
Yeah, and I liked them, but they were... You ever look at the date code on your stuff?
No.
And you're like...
I don't look for a reason.
Yeah, yeah, see, I did the same thing. Like, we bought the car in 2016, and the tread and everything on the... And the tires were in great shape. Car's always garage, so it never gets sun to, you know, beat down on them or anything too much. And I'm like, oh, these tires are pretty good. But they bias plies, they track. Every little groove in the road, you go over a set of railroad tracks, it darts here and there. There's part of me that always wanted to put radials on just because we drive. That's our driver. We drive that everywhere. And I'm like, oh, the tires are still in good shape. Well, I had 2 years ago, I had one of them where a little valve stem needed to be replaced, or the little rubber part was kind of falling apart. So it was leaking. So I took it up, and they're like, yeah, we'll just switch that out. You know, the rest of the tires should be fine. They're kind of old, though. I'm like, well, when are they from? He's like, 2002. I'm like, well, I don't drive it that much. Well, yeah, exactly. And after I got the Volvo running, those things, I looked at the date codes on that. That was from like 1994. And ooh. I was driving. I drove to that show in Bloomington with you, and we were on 74. And Sarah says, how old are these tires? It's kind of got like a little shimmy. I'm like, eh, probably pretty old. 1994.
Wow.
So I went right after that show and got new tires for that. I'm like, wow, this car is actually safe. It's fun to drive. I should do that with the one we drive more. So I finally splurged and I bought a set of tires called Contio White Paw Classics, which sounds like I made that up, but it's an actual company. They're based out of Nokia, Finland. And if Regan probably knows this too, Scandinavian car culture is huge. Huge. Like Swedes. Mostly Swedes, but it's all over.
Especially with Volvos.
Yeah, they're right. Big with Scandinavian cars, but also big old 50s American cars. They're huge over there. And so they actually reproduce like a kind of a, it's a radial style white wall. So it's a modern tire, but it has a white wall side. And when you look at the side profile, it actually looks like an old school white wall from the 50s or 60s. They're $239 a piece. I ordered a set of four, had them mounted balanced, and I put them on last night. It was too rainy and crappy, so I didn't drive the car, but I'm looking forward to actually putting some real miles on them, and I think the car is going to run and drive a heck of a lot better than the 20 years old. Yeah, wow. Not good. So
I'm interested in your review on those.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will. I'll share those. If they explode, I'll let you know. But no, the fun part about it is, boys and girls, don't skimp on tires. I'm historically one that does. I'm like, I'll get another winter out of it. You get to a point where you're like, it's just unsafe. So spend the money. Do what you got to do. I put them on a credit card. I'll get some frequent flyer miles or something. Who cares?
There you go.
The radials will let the suspension do their job, too, also.
Yes.
You know, instead of taking over, like you said, where the bias plies would track and make up their own, you know, path on the road.
Well, yeah. And when we got the car, the shocks and the bushings and stuff on the car were just, they were original. They were garbage. And I went through and I put all the KYBs on, and the car just never rode great. And I'm like, I have hundreds of dollars of suspension in this car. I've replaced every bushing. Why does it still ride like a, you know, basically a brick on a roller skate?
Starts with the tires.
Get the tires.
Rubber meets the road.
Starts with the tires.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll stop hitting, you know, I won't lose any more fillings out of my teeth when I hit these lovely potholes we have all over here. So, yeah, that's really all I got working on. Regan, as a fellow gearhead, I know on the way over we talked a little bit about what you were working on. But
yeah, I'll paraphrase that story. But, yeah, I won't give you the full version. But, yeah, the Model A got put up back in the fall for a little shakedown. Did some shakedown driving over the summer and broke a lot of stuff, some interesting stuff that I didn't even know some of which was broken.
Stranded anywhere?
No. Okay. In fact, I was just telling Daryl, on my last shakedown run, because I have seasonal plates, so I got, it was literally Halloween day.
Last day of October.
Yeah, exactly. So I just decided to take the Model 8 and just beat the crap out of it. You know, drive around the block, doing burnouts, power slides.
Seriously?
Oh,
man.
Yeah, because I'm going to take it apart anyway, right, and shake it down. And I knew the engine had a dead hole. Literally a dead hole. I got this.
That's my nickname in high school, too.
Was it?
Yeah. Wow.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Post-show.
So it was a cheap motor, small block Chevy, 400. And I knew that I had to, you know, do some actual physical investigation. So I took the head off, pulled the piston out, and it's got cracked ring lance. So the Gone. Actual piston cracked the ring lance. I thought maybe from all my compression checking and leak down checking that it had bad rings. No, even worse, the piston broke.
Wow.
It's a cheap motor. I got it secondhand. I'm not hurt about it. I'm not mad about it.
The space between the rings
yeah,
broke?
Exactly. Wow. Okay. And two of them, two of the ring lance.
To ruin, you weren't getting compression in that cylinder at all.
Almost no compression.
It's like an extra ring, right?
Kind of, yeah. Except it wouldn't act like it.
It's a self-oiling system. Yeah. And for folks at home, this is a 28? No, what?
A 31 Model A running a late 60s Chevy 400 small block, the biggest gotcha. Small block they made.
So kind of a period style hot rod with yeah. a little bit of some
exactly.
Modern stuff. Transmission wise, what are you running?
T5 transmission out of a Chevy S10.
Okay. Yeah. And rear end, what are you running?
Ford 9-inch with 411 gears.
Yeah. That's like out of the textbook. That is
it's
how
the,
you build
it's
something.
The textbook hot rod, yes. Checking all okay. the boxes, right? Anyway, I did the shakedown, found some missing bolts. But anyway, I'm on a search for one piston. So it's hard to buy just one piston, it turns out.
Yeah, buy a set.
Everybody wants to sell you a set. Yeah. Anyway, I've been, I'll shorten the story about how I found one piston. Turns out it was the wrong size because the piston's not a stamp. So it's actually a 40 over 400 small block. So anybody listening, that's huge.
Yeah.
It's like a 408 cubic inch now, minus the heads. And you don't mill an engine that size that much. So
yeah.
This engine has a lifespan. I intend to get every inch of it out. Yeah. But anyway, I'm working with my machinist. We're searching for a piston. We're going to stick that slug back in that hole and hopefully get it ready back again for once the plates come good again here in the spring.
Yeah, because you're good for another season or two, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So seasonal plates up in Wisconsin, are they from like May until September? Or
It's still actually Illinois, but the same. It's okay. Basically from
April to November.
I'm shut down from November to March, right?
Yeah, I believe April 1st to October 31st.
So
yeah.
Little Mule's got, yeah. He's got seasonal plates.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. If it's something that's going to spend most of the year in the garage, you're only going to take it out a couple times. It's just not worth,
yeah.
Unless you're just one of those people who wants to be able to like, you know. And there's some people like that, you know. In the middle of December, take your 31 Model A hot rod out and do donuts in the snow legally. Well, yeah. Not legally.
Well, it's got no heat. It's got no air conditioning. It's got bias ply 4-inch tires on it. 400 plus horsepower with 411 gears.
Wow. What's it weigh, you think? Have you driven over scale?
I've not scaled it yet. I need to scale it because I got to do some spring adjustments for the suspension, but I'm guessing around 1,800 pounds.
Yeah, about 2K. Nice. 2K yeah. with the driver and a full tank. He's probably.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fun. That's going to be fun.
It was a lot of fun, even with all the broken stuff I was driving around with it in. even running on 7 cylinders and missing some bolts in the transmission and the clutch not working right, it was a riot.
I'm looking forward
to tightening it all up.
If there's something to have like a well-oiled machine that everything's you know buttoned up and 100% ready to rock. But isn't there still some kind of the sketch factor of having something that's
it's terrifying.
A little hairy? It's still fun.
Like, that's the fun part. Like yeah. the first couple times you rolled, I bolt for bolt. You know, I did the whole truck myself. I bought this truck stock, took it apart, put it back together my way. And the first probably 3 or 4 times I took it out, I would go get gas, and I looked like a nervous wreck. I'm shaking
yeah.
while I'm putting gas in it, and people want to talk to me, and my voice is quivering.
Hey, it's a cool yeah. truck. Like,
I literally drove it 4 blocks, and I'm scared to death of this machine.
I don't know if I'm going to make it home.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I did drive it enough over the summer, like I said, to shake it down, find out what's breaking, find out my weak spots in my own personal garage engineering, and then to get over the fear of the truck. So
yeah.
me and the truck yeah. are growing together.
Yeah, nice.
So I could at least get out and have a conversation at Menards if you know I made a bolt run.
Once you wipe the bead of sweat
exactly.
from your brow.
Yeah. Hmm. There was only one time it looked like it was catching on fire where I had a couple people come by, and it was just leak of valve-covered gasket, no big deal.
Yeah. He'd be like Jalen's garage over there.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Except I'm my own mechanic, yeah.
That's true.
What's that line? It's also that line in Uncle Buck where he pulls up at the red light. Your car's on fire. No, it just does that. Your car's on fire.
Yeah. I'm going to go buy some rags inside. It'll be fine. I'm going to leave it smoking out here while I run inside real quick.
Get some brake clean on there. It'll burn off. Good stuff.
You think you'll take it to any shows or do anything with it this year?
I took it to technically two shows last year.
Wow. Oh, because you're with a new like car club. Like, did you have to get a tattoo for this group?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I hope
he's
not.
A probie, right? Are you still
The truck actually got me a probational status into a car club. I'm pretty excited about.
Do you have to wear like a pledge pin?
No.
Okay.
Well, just checking. I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
There you go. Sorry. Yeah, using the echo here.
But if they have one, I will wear it. Probably.
I'll bet you would, proudly.
Yeah, I would, absolutely.
This is why the pomade came into play. There's like a whole greaser aspect.
Part of the pre-show a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got to, accentuate the positive, right?
It works. Yes. Very vintage, very period correct hairstyle.
Yeah.
Yes. That's great.
By the way,
that's great.
There's nothing better. Like when you watch American Graffiti or you watch some of these old episodes like Happy Days or whatever, and you see the guys in like the leather coats and the white shirt and the jeans with the, you know, the hair all slicked.
I was doing that in high school in the
90s. Yeah. What was the name of that club?
In American Graffiti, it was called the Pharaohs.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't know. I think did Happy Days have something like that?
They did.
Well, it's kind of Fonzie had his own thing, but I don't know what Fonzie's club was.
Grease? Did Grease have a?
Grease Lightning were the T-Birds.
Yeah.
Grease, the movie.
And the girls, they were they had a club too.
The Pink Ladies?
Pink Ladies, yeah.
And Beauty School Dropout. Yeah. By the way, speaking of
old
school singers, did you see Frankie Valli's coming to Peoria?
No.
Whoa.
I'm like, I kind of want to go see him just because he's like 87 years old or something.
And so I went to the Beach Boys thing when Brian Wilson went there.
Yeah.
And there was like 50 people in the audience. So I imagine Frankie Valli will probably be about the same thing, wouldn't you think?
Where did he play at? The convention? It wasn't the convention center, was it?
No. It was at the theater. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
It was great. I mean, there was some Beach Boy people there, and as far as musicians,
yeah,
sounded great. And you know what? They played the whole Pet Sounds album. That was great.
Ooh,
It was good. I'm glad I went.
That's the thing. You got to get out and see those folks. Even if you're like, oh gosh, I don't know.
Yeah, Brian Wilson did get out from behind the piano, and then when he did walk, it was rough. Yeah, it was rough.
But go see those folks. They're an American icon, and 10 years from now, you're not going to be able, you know, God willing, they have a nice, long, healthy life. But go out and see some of that stuff because, you know, if you grew up with that, especially if you're into car culture, old hot rods, old whatever, any kind of old musician, any kind of old pop culture icon, go see them.
Just make Daryl proud, please.
Make me happy. Hey, yeah. Shirley from Laverne and Shirley just passed away.
Yeah.
She was at Peak and Marigold Festival. Couple years ago.
And so is Frank Fritz. Did Frank die? Frank died, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
they're all going down. I would never become a Pekin Marigold Chancellor.
You think that's the kiss?
I think it is.
Eric Estrada from Chips was there.
He's still alive for now.
Officer Poncherello?
For now.
By the way, great show. That's another one of those.
Is that just memories kicking in? Come on.
No. Yes. Look at every episode some really good stunt driving.
Just like the walk.
Yes.
The
like a lot of them opened up with like there was one episode where like there was like a dude driving like a dirt track race car down the street. and he rolls it. And like just randomly, that's how the show opened. And that's one of my like favorite episodes.
This is so great.
I love it. And you guarantee like they weren't pulling permits for filming all that stuff.
No.
So you see like LA traffic, like a busy freeway scene and some guy driving like a Firebird on two wheels.
Exactly.
You know, you're just like, that's safe.
We're going to roll this
Even
down.
Even Kojak had that kind of stuff though.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the good old days when the stunt drivers are like, we'll do TV. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, the movie Bullet is notorious for not, air quotes, pulling permits and just driving. And you can watch the people in the background like head.
I own Bullet, and I watched it here a while back. It is a great movie.
Yeah.
There's a couple scenes, though. There's some questionable scenes where there's not continuity. And you're like, what happened there? And that might be what you guys are talking about, where they patched some footage together that maybe wasn't authorized.
You can see the pedestrians in the background, like, what is going on here?
Right now? I have no clue. Yeah. My favorite in Bullet, and we could talk about this for hours, but my favorite is where the Charger power slide basically just like understeers into the camera setup.
Oh, yes.
And then you also see how many times the hubcaps on the Charger fly off. It's like every scene.
Yeah, that thing had at least 16 hubcaps.
And I think a 16-speed transmission
in the
Mustang.
Where did Fast and Furious get it, right?
Yeah. Speaking of which, again, I did see this.
On the Super Bowl, there was another.
Is it 10? Is it Fast and Furious 10?
Yes. Yeah, the final. It's supposed to be the final.
That's what they said the last time, didn't they?
I don't know.
Final. This time we mean it.
I who knows? It's not my bag, man.
It's not
my bag.
These sorts of things aren't my bag.
No. So we got news. We got Cars of the Week coming up. We even have a Moment of Musk, which we haven't done a Moment of Musk in like two episodes.
Hey now.
But one of the things I want to talk to Regan about, I'm gonna just like go right in here. Now you're going to give me a prep. But no, this isn't really unscripted, because one of the things that Regan does for the big time auto manufacturer he works for, he talks about skills and he talks about vocational and goes around and kind of talks to some tech schools and stuff like that. So we've had a lot of conversations about this in my shop, because we're trying to talk about the next generations of technicians coming in. It's fun for us to sit here and talk about like the cars and stuff and the hobbies, what we're doing in the garage and stuff like that. But and there are younger kids doing this stuff too. We're trying to bring these kids up into the industry. And so this has been like a fixation for who you work for, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not just who I work for. It's an industry. You know, the whole industry is doing, you're looking for the next realm of talent. You know, I mean, we don't even know what it looks like. One of the things I say a lot, and I guess I'll just dive right in too, is one of the things I say personally a lot when I'm talking to individuals like you as my job is what it takes to work on a car today. You have to have so many more brain cells than we did when we started in this industry, that you have so many more options than we had at the same time. Because you were saying at the pre-show, Eric, you got to be, one, you got to know how to work on cars.
Yeah.
Lug nuts, bolts, brakes, you know, righty, tighty, lefty, loosey. You got to have that basic skill. But you also have to incorporate so many other things. Electrical engineering, networking for the computer systems. Learning how, you know, to get online and to access that information. And it just goes on and on and on. I'm paraphrasing very shortly, but...
Well, yeah, and just communication technology. Be able to use everything. You
know, yeah.
The tools
then,
at our disposal these days.
The communication technology from all the, you know, infotainment systems. And then, since you mentioned this communication word, the soft skills that go along with it to talk about what you're doing and convey what you're doing. You know?
Talk to the manufacturer.
Yeah. The manufacturer, customers, your employer, and everything in between. And to follow a training path to get to that.
Yeah.
Because you can't just walk off the street and say, I'm really good at networking. Can I work on your cars? No, you have to incorporate it all together and make that package. And society still expects you to start that in high school, in your late and early teens.
Yeah. Taking off brake pads and rotors and balancing tires.
The basics.
Yeah. And this isn't training that happens overnight either. Even a quick down and dirty tech school will still take you a couple of years. Factory training, it'll still take you, you know, 2 to 3 years as well. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't happen overnight, but the skills you still have to have, and to find that individual and to keep that individual in a service shop, whether it be a dealership, which is what I talk about, or dealing with your competitors, which are the independent shops. And one of the things we were talking about before the show again, Eric, was...
You got to listen to the pre-show, folks. If you're not a subscriber, you are losing out.
How the independents know this.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to advertise here for the independents, but they're not restricted by franchise obligations and payment styles that a lot of the dealerships, the antiquated ways of the dealerships of paying their technicians still exist.
Mm-hmm.
They get to be a little bit more freeform with how they attract and keep their talent. And that's a very big thing that the industry has to start taking a closer look at.
So what are some of the challenges if you aren't, let's say, you know, some of the technicians that come out through that dealership system, they get their jobs, you know, they work in a dealership for a period of time. What happens next? What's the trajectory? Do they wind up going into business for themselves oftentimes? Is it another industry that they are attracted to once they get that training? Is it open up an independent shop? Like, what typically were you guys in the industry losing talent to?
Everybody.
Yeah, I think that's
anything.
I think that just puts itself to the individual, because I think you're talking about a guy like you were talking about all the different skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a curious person. You're talking about a person that constantly wants to be challenged.
Lifelong learner, that kind of thing.
So when you give them a career path that's 20 years ahead of the same old thing, oh, we'll give you a dollar raise every year or whatever, you know, that's not attractive to that person. So that's why they end up going in their own shop. That's why they go into a different industry. That's why they take a job.
And it's not just the money that we're losing these individuals at either. It's the, as you said it yourself, it's the trajectory, the career path.
Yeah.
So I'm a mechanic. I'm a technician.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't get to do anything else for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
What do I grow into?
Yeah.
Make more money. I'm still doing the same stuff today that I'll be doing in 30 years.
Yeah.
Only more technology.
Well, and not even that so much, because I do believe the industry is going to change so much in the next 10 years that you can't say what we're going to do today is what you're going to be doing 10 years from now.
But he's still going to have a toolbox. He's still going to have a lift in the bay, in
he
the
is.
Shop.
And he's still going to be in that same spot. And that, and I get that. That is tough. Mm-hmm.
That's very tough.
Yeah, it is.
But so, the type of work that they're doing today versus 10 years ago versus 10 years from now,
yeah,
radically different than... I had a neighbor who was a diesel mechanic, worked at Center State International. And he's like, when I started in 1977, my first job was rebuilding a DT-466 out of an international truck.
Mm-hmm.
My last day when I retired, finishing a rebuild on a DT-466 on an international truck.
That's the glory that I grew up in that I was hoping to do.
Yeah, you're like,
but that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. No.
And
he even said himself, and yeah. I think I've heard that term too. He's like, I'm a dinosaur. I retired at just the right time because it got to a point where I'm like, I can do that part. Everything else, let these kids do it.
Mm-hmm.
And by kids, he's talking people in their 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
You know, because he's at the time he retired, I think he was 64.
Well, you mentioned where these folks going to as an alternative with this skill set. Right here in Peoria, in your own backyard, is the medical field.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The skill sets it takes to work on a car, get trained to work on a dealership kind of condition car.
Right.
You have those same skill sets to go in the medical field. I don't mean doctor. I mean the technological
right.
field of the medical.
Right. Sure.
But then again, you also have the skill set to go take a job where you don't have to be quite as cerebral and think so heavily and be like a line technician for a big fleet, whether it be in your city
mm-hmm.
or even be well, it's not quite as popular as it used to be, but like the mines and stuff around here, the heavy truck equipment industry.
Sure.
So. You can still use mechanical skills, but not have to think as hard.
Yeah, right? No, there's well, certainly UPS and FedEx.
Yeah,
and
huge.
Precision bus planning.
Companies,
there's all these new companies.
Municipalities.
Yeah.
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 All the same skill set.
Yeah.
It just depends on how much you would like to apply yourself. So if you want advancement, go to the medical field. If you want complacency and rely on, you know, dirty fingers and hands, then yeah, join a fleet. And everything in between. I'm not promoting one or the other. The dealership industry is still very lucrative and still a very great, wholesome place to be. But that my point is that owners of these stores need to understand their competition.
Going back to the big three: mechanical, electrical, and networking skills. You and I have talked about this before, and this is not a new conversation. Rick and I are just having this for the first time. We've had this in my shop several times.
Yeah,
but. I call that person a unicorn.
Yeah.
You know, I have a big fear that if you find that kid or that individual who has those skills, he could say, well, wait a second. I can make double the money that's being made as a mechanic, just applying that as a network engineer or working in the electrical field or something like that. So I feel like in some ways we have to really step up our game to make sure these people know that this job has so much upside. You're going to learn so much, and you can do so much with the rest of your life, you know, working on these cars. I think EVs, hydrogen cars, there's so much new technology coming out that the sky's the limit. So why wouldn't you want to get your hands dirty and get this stuff now? But how do we make it attractive to them?
Exactly. Yeah. That is the key word. How do you make it attractive? And by that is simply looking at who's stealing your employers, who's stealing that talent, and adopting how they're getting paid and how they're getting reimbursed, how they're getting retained, recognized, recruit, retain, and recognize. Those are the big three we talk about in my office all the time. Those are the three you need to focus on. And it's not always salary. It's really not, especially for the newer generation. Even for me, it's not even salary.
Time off is huge right now.
Time off, flexibility, the ability to live your life, work-life balance, all that's tough. The problem is the way the industry is set in the automotive industry is you come in, you work 9 to 5, we schedule your cars for you, you work on them, they leave, we fix them, blah, blah, blah. Really that we need to readjust that somehow.
Yeah.
I'm not here to talk about those answers today. And also the way the dealerships are paid from the manufacturers is a whole nother realm, you know? So that dictates how you are able to pay mm-hmm. your technicians.
Sure.
A lot of the industry right now is experimenting with salary pay technicians. If you get outside of the car industry and go to even to the diesel industry, our next closest cousin, they're almost all salary.
Really?
Yeah. Or hourly. They're not as flat rate, I should say. Yeah.
And how long of a has that been a concept in that industry? Is it relatively new?
No, it's not. They've been like that a little bit differently than ours. Their jobs are bigger, they're heavier, they take longer, parts are, you know,
holding the impact guns for those big trucks.
Oh gosh, my. Yeah.
They're five times the weight. Yeah.
So it's a different thing. It's a whole different concept of the way they get their cars fixed or their fleets, because it's also fleet-based, don't forget, too, for the most part. So I'm not saying there's a right way or a wrong way, but it's time for especially the dealership side of the industry to start experimenting, if nothing else. If the manufacturer's not helping you, or if you don't feel like the manufacturer's supporting you, then it's time for the dealership to actually maybe explore their own options. And it might be different for each one of your communities. Yeah. What works for you here in Pekin is going to be vastly different of what works for you at a 40-technician bay up in Chicago.
Yeah, but let's talk about vocational school and the local college, the community college, who's doing these education processes. Are they truly doing these kids a favor in what they're projecting for these kids to do?
That's a tough question to answer.
I don't think the curriculums even give... I don't think they're strong enough to weed out the best of the best. I think they try and graduate everybody, and they don't give them a real perception of what they might be walking into in 10 years.
I'm going to answer the question the way you love it when I answer these kind of questions,
Eric. I don't know,
Eric. But it comes back to you guys. Yeah. It comes back to the people that are hiring those students. Are you on an advisory board? I'm not asking you specifically. Yeah. I'm asking in general. Are you on an advisory board? Are you directly involved with these places where you get these students?
Yeah.
Are you helping to dictate and create what that school is teaching? Because if you're not, you're missing the point. There's the vice president of ASC, George Ahrens. He makes an awesome argument for exactly what I'm talking about. He can articulate this way better than me. I'm actually geek out on this guy a little bit. I'm a bit of a fan. He's had a fireside chat that you and me actually sat and listened to together a few years ago.
Okay, I think I remember that.
Yeah, so he talks about exactly this subject. And it's up to you, the employer, to dictate to your local community and whatever facilities you have that are teaching these individuals what you need. And if you're not actively involved in that, and I don't mean you, Eric, I mean anybody that's listening, then you're not furthering the sport.
So there's almost like a little bit of a recruiting campaign or a recruitment effort in terms of trying to capture the type of the type of employee that you want working for you
right
out of school.
You're exactly right, Daryl.
That's a lot of work.
Well, it's a lot of work, and there's also competition involved. Eric's not the only one looking for the best, brightest talent.
Exactly.
But you should be able to find an avenue to where you can dictate to these schools and these people teaching these individuals what you need and what you need in the future. If you're not telling them what you want in the future, then you're just along for the ride. At least you showed up. Thank you. Yeah. But you need to talk about what your franchisees telling you,
but in that scope, and let's not we're not going back and forth here as a tennis match, like arguing about it. I don't know what I need in 7 years or 5 years because
but you know what you need in two or three
years.
No,
but the industry's changing so much so fast, and that's why I don't believe curriculum can even keep up. And I don't think the manufacturers can even tell us what to expect in the next couple of years.
As a member of multiple advisory boards in the area, they are desperate for technology to teach these individuals. They are desperate. The last 2 years hasn't helped the situation because manufacturers such as ours don't have the ability to donate things or that we would like to. But again, it keeps boiling down to the grassroots level. What do you have? It starts with you, and then if you go back to your franchisee and ask them to support you, that's how we grow this thing.
Yeah.
It really is. And that's where you get a level up on your competitors. It really is.
Some of this, too, I want to say has to do with generational. There's generational shifts in the workforce.
Hugely right now. And not just our industry.
No. And I'm obviously, I was born in 79, so I'm 43. And I've heard millennial forever, since I was in college. Oh, these millennials. We've adapted. We've adjusted. The environment at work has changed in terms of work-life balance, in terms of being able to offer other benefits that might not necessarily be strictly compensation-related. Mm-hmm. There's other things. I think that's evolved somewhat.
Immensely.
But what's next? Because it sounds to me like in the old days, it was, here's the job, you want it or not, as opposed to what we need to be thinking of is, here's the job, does this sound like a good fit, and what can we do to make it a better fit to attract more people like yourself?
Exactly.
We're still having, it seems like in so many industries, and this is one of them, the automotive and service industry in particular, is just a small little snippet of it, but it still seems like we're adapting the entire workplace to fit the needs because we need to attract a certain type.
Yeah. And it feels very much that way. It almost feels like we're like held hostage by that concept in a certain way, right?
A little bit. And especially for folks who are of that mindset, you know, my parents, it was, here's the job, you want it or don't. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, my first couple of jobs. Like,
yeah,
here's the salary,
yeah.
Period. Mm-hmm. You want it? Not, I mean, I wouldn't even negotiate. It was just like, here's what it is. And you go to work, you suit up, you show up, and you hope that you work there long enough to retire. That model, that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
The workplace has changed. The employee has changed. The employee coming out of school, the prospective employee, in terms of what they expect. To Eric's point, I mean, you have the technological needs and things like that, but like, what are the expectations of, let's say, a 23-year-old who comes out of a trade school? What are the expectations other than, like, I want the work-life balance and all the, you know, the kind of the buzzwords and things like that? What are we missing in the automotive industry? What is not catering and speaking to them?
I think there's no clarity. I don't think there's... You throw them on the floor and they don't know what to expect. You know, so we're not... You know, if you're a carpenter, you know you're going to be cutting wood all day, right?
Yeah, I need this wall built.
Yes.
Cut me this.
Yeah, like you're going to frame... If you're a framer, you're framing houses, you're a roofer, you're roofing, and maybe you have to do... Maybe you become an artisan at some point in those crafts.
Sure.
If you were an auto mechanic in my shop, you're a jack of all trades.
You're generalist.
Yeah.
You're a generalist in so many areas.
Yeah. So, I mean, we take a 23-year-old kid out of trade school, and he's like, all right, I learned everything I learned from trade school. And then you take him in the shop, and then next thing you know, he's got a mouse that's eaten half a car.
You got to rewire
and
it.
And he's like, I didn't go to school for this. You know,
yeah.
or it's filled with dirty diapers and crap like that. You know, just I'm just taking a situation that's like so obtuse from what he learned in school.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't make sense.
And out of 10 cars you take in a day, all 10 of them are going to be different.
Yes.
You're going to have the some stuff that they learned, like probably the basic maintenance, the routine stuff. Yeah. The
if you're at Maui Jim's and you're fixing sunglasses every day, you know every day you're going to be unscrewing, you're doing this, whatever. You're in a factory, you're at Caterpillar, you're doing the same thing every day. If you're a technician in the auto industry, especially, you know, a full service dealership, you could be doing anything. You could be changing oil all the way up to diagnosing, you know, something horrible like I just described earlier. You got the whole gambit. And so that person coming out of trade school, that's not what they signed up for. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's what they were recruited for when they were going into
the industry. I know for a fact all the trade schools that I've visited or been associated with don't teach mouse damage.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't. but that's the reality.
It's a real thing, and it's actually a big moneymaker for that technician and for you. So I would want to learn how to work on mouse damage, but at the same time, we're using this arbitrarily, but at the same time, you can't teach that. That's your point, right?
Yeah.
That's one of those things you have to learn on the job.
So I guess what Eric's saying, what I hear from the other side of the coin is you got
to
find that quote unquote unicorn, as you mentioned, but you got
to
find that person that's going to lean up against his toolbox in the morning, sip his coffee, and is ready for anything to get pulled into that bay and attack it and be proud of it and excited to do it.
Yeah.
Well, there's some people that like to have that challenge to work against. It's the same people that like to have a deadline to work against because it gives them that motivation to be like, okay, I got to figure this out. It's a challenge. It's a puzzle.
I know some young folks that are really... really like that, but that challenge is not like it used to be. That challenge is so much bigger and it has so much wider breadth. Even in your little shop, Eric, by standards, you're very small. You have in your shop right now a RAV4 EV, which is made by Tesla, that somebody in your store needs to know how to work on. And today or this week, I threw you a wrench or threw you a wrench.
Appropriate.
Ding, ding. with a brand new right off the truck Tundra that has a crazy problem that may or may not actually be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between that, there's oil changes and brake jobs and all the normal stuff going on, you know, along with some customer issues that are not even broken cars that you need to just quell or the technician needs to quell.
Yep.
All that's in between. So you have the highest, low, and the craziest levels happening in your little small shop. And to find those individuals and keep those individuals and get them back the next day and to rely on them for years.
Oh, yeah.
And not get them.
And to plan a course.
Yeah.
You know, basically we're making a plan for, you know, the dealership for years to come based on these individuals in the shop. And you're trying to hold that glue together. I think the biggest fear I have and maybe you can talk to this. I feel like the technology is changing so fast at the manufacturer level that sometimes I wonder if they even think about the dealerships maintaining the fleet after they put stuff out for release. Do they even realize how when they put out the GR Corolla, when they put out the new BRZ or the EV model, and then they do all these things. I think they even released that model before they even knew the dealers had charging stations. So dealers could get the car, not even be able to charge it, right?
Yeah, it's tough. There's a definite pressure from multiple angles. And unfortunately, and I'm not going to speak for my own company, I'm just speaking for the industry. I think unfortunately the repair aspect, we'll simplify it that much, the repair aspect of some people call it the after ownership or after sales care. That has become a secondary thought, unfortunately, and we'll get to it. We'll figure it out. Just get the car out there. Get the customer in the car.
Right.
We'll move on from there.
We'll fix it after there's a problem.
It feels like even the short time that you and I have been in this industry, which is 20-plus years, it feels like we've been chasing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It very much feels that. It doesn't feel like that way when we started.
Has it gotten worse?
Yeah, it has gotten worse.
Yeah.
Because technology, even infotainment systems, have become massively more complicated in the last 5 years.
The data storage that comes off of that, and infotainment system, safety connect systems,
and everything's interconnected.
Everything's interconnected, and it's just like computers. It's designed to make life easier.
But
for
it's
us.
Amazing when it works. You know, when my appointment coordinator can get a message and she sees that a car maybe was in an accident, even and she calls him and says, "Hey, it looked like your pre-collision indicators went on. So make sure if you guys need any help or do you need us to recommend a body shop or something like that." That's amazing.
It is.
Customers are like, how do you know that?
Yeah, or the car is already uploading data to you, me, our technical assistance hotline, and engineers all at the same time before the car even showed up at the dealership. So when the car does come in, this happened to me this week where the car comes in and I was ready. I called the service manager and said, "Hey, when this car comes in, if it doesn't come in, call the customer, get it in, and here's what we're already going to do."
You already got a plan. You got a plan of action.
Yes, huge plan. Yes.
Well, and that speaks to the technology can kind of assist when it comes to that ambiguity where you have somebody who's like, "I don't even know where to start," a younger mechanic or something like that, where you're a tech that you're not probably going to throw a lot of that stuff. Would the tech get to a point where they can kind of prescribe and almost have like a blueprint for like, here's what's up, here's what you need to do, here's your work order?
That's what's called guided diagnostics. So if I really want to speculate, I think what Eric's talking about right now, this era we're in that we feel like we're stuck in but we're not, I think we're in this realm between the can-do individuals that are self-taught, that want to keep learning, that can handle anything that comes in, and we're getting ready for the next generation. We're going to skip a generation. We're going to find this other generation that is going to be based off of guided diagnostics, which are doing exactly what you're talking about, Daryl, where the car already figured it out.
Yeah.
I myself, as a field engineer, do very little repair on, like, my biggest things I used to do was drivability concerns, air fuel ratio, stuff like that. Get really deep into all that kind of drivability stuff. The car tells us almost all of it now.
Yep.
And it's not just my manufacturer, it's every manufacturer. So what that leads to next is guided diagnostics, a la parts changers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you hear that critique a lot, but in all honesty, it saves time.
It does save time. It's efficient. It saves time. But it doesn't take the brains out of the game. That's what Eric's getting at. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't mean we just need robotic parts changers out there.
You still have to have your head in enough of the game and know enough about the systems to be able to verify.
Yeah.
To verify, like, okay, this is what it says.
You still need to know the basics. You still need to know Ohm's law. You still need to know the other things that accompany these technologies. And you still also need the soft skills to talk to somebody about what you're doing and what happened. There's still a customer out there. There's still an employer out there.
And that's the hardest thing, I think, for some of these technicians to wrap their head around when they're working on a car. There is a human being behind that. There's a person, a family that bought that car because they wanted a reliable vehicle. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trusting that car to take them across country vacation. We got to get to soccer practice this weekend. And to them, it's a mechanical issue, and they're fighting.
Fix it. It's got computers. Fix it.
Yeah, right.
Why is this so difficult?
The customer doesn't understand it at all. You know, so now we're talking about those soft skills that that technician has to talk to somebody at support. And so this is kind of going off the rails as far as probably what any manufacturer rep wants to hear. But I said this to you the other day. I can envision a future where you guys are shipping cars out to the dealers. The dealers are selling them, but they know that the tech, because the certification isn't happening at the dealership level, they know the education isn't happening at vocational and tech schools, that the manufacturer almost has to have a SWAT team coming out of the region to fix cars that they know that the dealerships can't even do anymore. I envision that happening in 10 years.
I think it's going to manifest its way in just what I told Daryl about guided diagnostics. I think we're prepared for something similar right now. I think we're building up to that. I don't even think my job is the quote-unquote SWAT team.
No, I don't think it's you. I don't think it's a guy like you.
Thanks, Eric.
Well, no, I know.
He's wearing battle fatigue.
No, I'm saying, like, I've worked with some great technicians over the years, mm-hmm. and I could see some of those guys being, you know, occupied by the manufacturer, say, here's a van, here's a vehicle with all the tools you need, and we're going to send you out because you're going to deal with this. And to be fair, I think Tesla and some other manufacturers kind of do it that way right now anyway.
Yeah, yeah. That's the beauty of a startup, right? You get to reinvent what you're doing. Now, in regards to your quote-unquote SWAT team, we are looking to start working on the way your hierarchy is structured within your shop, from the lube guy, lube person, all the way up to the service manager. Mm-hmm. We're working on helping you compartmentalize those individuals and put them in the places where you're going to need them. Without getting into specifics, but you know, your guys like your Kennys, we would like to see you associate in a certain kind of capacity versus your Drews. Yeah. You know,
These are two examples in my shop.
Yeah. Exactly. Two different skill level sets, two different generations, actually. Yeah.
Both long-time employees,
equally effective in their own right, but they evolved mm-hmm. and will continue to evolve in certain ways. We're looking for you to be able to give you guys the tools to the resources to help that evolution and not necessarily put a title on what those individuals are, but be able to associate their actual specific job duties as we manifest. So if that means Drew takes on certain kinds of technology as it grows, that will be his position, not so much just standing on his toolbox waiting for whatever comes in.
Yeah.
It's almost, to me, the way I associate it is because I was an old GM tech. I shouldn't even be using the words old, but when you would go into a GM Goodwrench store, you know, the technician had the sign hanging above his shop that said, "This is Jim Bob, and he does transmissions and engine rebuilds."
Yep.
And so I don't think we're going to go to those signs, but that's what I'm getting at, is maybe it's time we start considering specialized technology.
Going back to their strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of having everybody being able to do whatever. No,
yeah, and that's the way we used to train everybody. I want everybody in the shop to be able to do 100% of the jobs 100% of the time. And that's that's the way you set your coverage, because it was all about convenience for the customer, too. We want customers to be able to come in Monday through Saturday and get any recall done, get anything done.
Sounds easy, right?
Yeah.
Sounds perfect.
That's what we want.
Everybody. Yeah.
Everybody has everything. But the flip side to that is then when you do, the stuff hits the fan. I remember my dad complaining. They bought a Ford Explorer. 2 years later, they had an issue with a bearing go out. It was in the transmission. And they had to wait two weeks to get a transmission specialist.
Yeah.
It was probably an FTS or
something. You said the same thing to your customers that still have the old RAV4 EVs.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is Tesla technology, and I got to wait till I can free up some time to work on that.
Yeah.
You know what people like hearing in 2023? You have to wait for something.
Exactly. That's the problem.
We are so conditioned now. And younger folks, too. 2 days. I should never have to wait more than 2 days for anything.
Maybe we should be thankful for COVID in some regards. Because you can always fall back on that. Well, since COVID. You know, and in Central Illinois, it's like since Rivian. Since Rivian stole, you know, all the technicians out of the
area. That goes back to the beginning of this conversation is, yes, Rivian's one of those disruptors.
Yeah.
I hate that word. But it's a legit thing. They are a disruptor all the way from their service experience to their sales experience. They're doing it different because they get to do it different.
Right. They get to write the playbook.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's benefits and drawbacks to that.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of benefits to the stability of the current dealer model and exactly. the dealer service model.
Them and their employees are willing to negotiate that instability. Not all of us are.
Yeah, so. I think they're absolutely willing to put themselves out there too, because mm-hmm. they know it's a new experience. I mean, I heard that from a lot of people who went over there. It's like we're creating from the ground up.
Which is exciting. It's great. It's
anybody also, in the business, if you didn't think about it, you're crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you gave it some thought. I gave it some thought. A lot of peers of mine gave it some thought. That's not where I live in my world right now. Doesn't fit me.
Sure.
But we both know people that did.
And yeah.
Is it working out? We're not sure
yet. But think about that. Think about if you're in the internal combustion world and you were offered the promise to go to basically electric car company, and you knew you were shedding a lot of grief. I mean, obviously, we're moving on to electronics. We're dealing on to electric motors. And there's some coolant systems and stuff like that.
Sure.
But how much are we giving up of old technology? I'll never have to look at a car older than a year, you know, if I work at this company.
Mm-hmm.
How great is that?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to roll in with a 96 model car and say it doesn't start up like it used to.
Yeah.
Like, of course it doesn't, because it's as old as, you know,
Methuselah. And you can keep building off of that thought, Eric, because they have less moving parts. They have less electronics. They have less of everything on an electric car.
Oh, by the way, it's probably under warranty, so I know I'm getting paid. I don't have to worry about diagnostic and all that, because the manufacturer's already paying for this. Hopping into a brand new car company like that, I could see the draw to that.
Oh, absolutely.
But over time, don't you think that those things are still going to... There's still the same, I want to say, like the pros and cons. There's still the same cons of working in a place like that. As vehicles like that age, the service, the maintenance, the replacements, it's different.
It's uncharted territory is what it is.
Yeah, it is.
Also,
it is. You're putting yourself on a limb.
Yeah.
There's a fair amount of risk and you have to be willing to be like, I'm going to gamble and see how this pays off.
Yeah. Simple example, we know how to change the battery on a Rivian.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a battery need to be replaced on a Rivian? We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Do they have a defect for one? Are they going to have a recall for two? Do they have a lifespan? We don't know what that is yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So just that concept alone, which you've dealt with in a small detail in the RAV EVs that's coming through your shop, you know, we don't know what they're going to have to grow into that the big manufacturers, the worldwide manufacturers, already kind of are geared up to handle.
Yeah, and I that has been my biggest argument, that's why I don't believe a startup can survive that long, because I do believe Volkswagen is gigantic, Toyota is gigantic, General Motors, Ford. These companies could weather a decade of beating and still be there and have their EV product on the road. So I feel like Tesla is probably the best chance of an independent automaker to stick around for the next decade. But realistically, if Ford sets up charging stations at all their dealerships, and they have, and I think the Mach-E now is one of the best-selling EV cars, right?
Yeah, it is.
Instantly?
We looked at the numbers.
I mean, what did Ford know about EVs 5 years ago? As far as I knew, zero.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they have one of the top-selling cars in the market.
I mean, they dip their toes in the hybrid territory, but nothing
seriously.
Like,
no, yeah. That just shows you that customers, they respect the name. They respect the fact that there's a local dealer on the corner. And so they expect service on that guy in the corner. I think there's a big value to that.
Name recognition, brand loyalty, all of that stuff. If my folks didn't buy, a regular Explorer now, I if they bought a car 2-3 years from now, they'd probably be looking at an electric, just because it's one less thing. Again, as folks age, I think that's a whole thing too. I think people the boomers that are of that age where it's like, hey, I could have something I just plug in, use whatever, zero emissions, and I don't have to take it in for an oil change every 6 months or a year. I think there's a lot of benefits to that. There's a lot of benefits to younger people that don't want to be bogged down with service reminders and things like...
They probably got a robot mower too, right?
They probably do.
Kind of want one of those.
I do too.
Your point though, Eric, I look at it a little bit more holistically. I think the EV...
You hippie.
And
Is that avocado toast? What is that?
Yeah, look at my hair.
Hipster.
Not a hipster. Anyway. It's kind of like... The way I look at it is like... Analog brakes came out. We survived that. Fuel injection came out. We survived that.
I get that.
Telematics. Infotainment.
Yep.
I kind of really categorize hybrids and EVs as the same thing. We're evolving. We're adding new technology.
Sure.
It's still part of the automotive industry. it's a little bit more heightened when it comes to specialized technology and repairs. I get it, but it's not going to go away. It's just something we're going to adapt to, just like we did with all these other things I just rattled off.
Yeah, I just, okay, and so in general, when that kind of stuff happens, the market changes, you know, like you were talking about, the pay structure changes, the expectations of the person working on that vehicle probably change. So we will adapt. We'll have to adapt, mm-hmm. otherwise you die.
That's
so.
The real root of the problem, if yeah. you ask me. It's yeah. really back to the flat rate started in the 30s and 40s with, here's how much a valve job costs.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how much an engine overhaul costs. Have you ever used those words, engine overhaul, lately, Eric?
No.
Exactly.
No.
Let alone a valve. So this is where the flat rate system, for a lot of our listeners probably don't understand what that is. I'm not going to explain it in detail, but that's part of how technicians are paid. Job pays 3 hours to do a brake job, and if you can do it in two, guess what? You made a bonus hour.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
We kind of need to go away from that.
Yeah, because the guys are trying to get double time all the time.
Good for them.
Yeah.
So what other carrot as an employer do you dangle? What else do you hang out there? I don't know. That's the question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is the question. Yeah, we could sit there and I'm not going to sit here and talk about pay plans, but yeah. And you know, case by case, and this is what management is, when you know the hot buttons of your employees, what it takes to satiate that employee.
Well, you need to have some sort of incentives, and that's true across the board.
Yeah.
That's why I think you talked about what COVID changed and this and that, the expectation, you know, we talked about the whole, you know, mass, what do you call it, the great resignation and all that other stuff. You had people that are like, what am I doing? And it didn't matter, not specifically in like automotive repair, but it was just like, I'm in a job that I feel I've reached whatever peak I've been at, there's nothing else for me. What else is there other than doing the same thing over and over and over?
Yeah.
And there's part of me that's like, that's what work is. It's called work for a reason. It's not happy fun time. But at the end of the day, I've also reached, you know, a point in certain parts of my career where I'm like, you know,
I don't want to insult previous generations, but I mean, I think there's some naivete in the fact that our previous generations were satisfied knowing that they could work 20 or 30 years in a job.
It was satisfying. It's still satisfying to me.
Is it?
That's 100%. My plan, yeah. But that's not the way it is for a lot of other people. And also, I'm not even going to use the word generations. I'm just saying there's a lot of other people that live their life with that, like, tamped down, with that, like, you know, hidden inside of them. They're like, screw this. I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah,
right.
I want to grow. I'm a peacock. I want to show my feathers. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember, I remember this clearly. I remember I moved out of town. I moved out of my parents' house, and I moved to Miami. My dad goes, well, where are you going to work? I'm like, I don't know. Goes, you don't have a job? I'm like, no, I'll get a job when I get there. I don't care. He's like, well, how can you do that? And I'm like, I don't care. I'll find a job. I will work, you know, whatever it takes to pay the rent,
mm-hmm.
to be with whoever at the time, you know. And so people will do whatever it takes, you know.
That's still happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once they do it, then what's next? If I'm going to commit to you, Eric, what else you got?
Right.
That's a dollar an hour raise for the next many years?
Yeah. And honestly, we do a terrible – and this This is where we get down to the experience. This is a whole nother show, so maybe we should just stop now.
Yeah, we're really going long
on
this subject.
But I talk about this all the time. It's, you know, at that point, we talk about new startups like Tesla and all these guys. They can do it right because they're starting from fresh. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you can't guarantee is if you stop at one dealership for a franchise in Illinois and then go to California or Florida or whatever, you're going to get the same experience. You know,
as a customer,
because they're all franchise dealers and they all do whatever they want.
I know if you
that's the concept, that's what we strive for.
Yeah, but one guy's selling this, another guy's selling that, mm-hmm. and you know, one guy's telling me this. It's not the same experience across the country,
right?
So, I mean, this is we start getting into this whole sandbox versus, you know, if I'm Tesla, it's the same experience everywhere.
Well, I only think it's because of their newness.
Their expectation isn't there. They don't have a history
of,
like, do you remember going to the car dealerships when you were a kid?
But I would argue, too, that they probably do the same. Their employees probably have a pay plan universally. So if I'm a Tesla employee, I go to any Tesla dealership and know exactly what the pay plan is, right?
To my knowledge, yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak too candidly on that. But
And Tesla, it's the only example I have. So
I do have a lot of examples that I won't talk about right now. One, we're going long, and two, it's little bit out of my actual know, what I actually know, but as a technician at a Tesla store, for example, they do have a career path. They do have opportunities that you can get into that won't just bind you to that toolbox and that same lift for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
We and a lot of the manufacturers that have been around for a long time don't really have those opportunities.
No.
And if we do, the dealerships will say, well, you're stealing our employees.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Here's the deal. If I have five guys changing oil up front and I have three master techs in the back, I don't have room for five more master techs to graduate their way up.
No, you don't.
So where do they go?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's the question. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
We're asking you to be creative.
Yeah,
right?
And so then at that point, I'm like, well, I don't want to load myself up with super smart guys because those super smart guys, you know, they're not going to stick around.
And you can't afford them.
Yeah.
Yeah, at some point, yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to say your door rate on air, but you have to meet a certain door rate to meet a certain pay scale of your highest guys and build it down there, build it down from there, right?
Yeah.
So you and me have had this conversation multiple times in our manufacturer, like, can you afford more quote-unquote master technicians?
No.
You can't.
Could you find a master technician?
There's a finite amount for every store. Yeah, that's my point.
There is. Yeah.
And as long as you have that volume of customer traffic to maintain that.
But that's also a finite amount.
It is, in a region.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you're...
Okay, so going back to the original, I mean, this is literally the first sentence of the conversation was, one of your jobs is... As a consultant to the dealers, I mean, you talk about this with owners and managers and stuff like that, right?
I had this exact conversation 100 times.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is not new to anybody. And it's not even just coming from you. This is coming down from on high down to you guys to say, hey, you need to start talking to people, right?
And this isn't just our manufacturer. It's every manufacturer. This is an industry-wide problem / concept / idea / whatever you want to title it. I mean, it's... Basically, we're exploring uncharted territory, Eric, like we started at the conversation. You know, unfortunately, the manufacturer in some instances put a lot of onus on the dealer. But at the same time, I don't know what to tell you where to go from here. I mean, it's up to the dealer.
That's why they pay you, Regan, to tell me where to go from here. You're failing.
What you're supposed to do is
for every question that Eric asks, you're supposed to answer with a question. That's what consultants do.
Exactly.
What you need to do is
sign up for our program for $300 a month or $3,000 a month. We'll make sure we...
Quote unquote, Eric, me walking through a shop. Really? Another non-committal answer. Thanks, corporate guy.
Did I say that recently?
Almost exactly.
Man, it's almost like you recorded it.
It's I've actually used it and said it to other people. I know what I'm doing.
No, this is good discussion. It's good discussion because everybody that is on the customer side of the fence definitely doesn't see some of this. They just all it seems like people care about is the time it takes to turn your stuff from when I drop my keys off to when I can pick my stuff up. They don't care how the sausage is made, but clearly they should because this type of industry is also susceptible to the same things that every other industry is attracting. What was it? The three R's, right?
Recruit, retain, and recognize.
There you go. So if it's widgets one day, it's automotive service technicians another, or you know, in healthcare, see the same thing in all these industries where it's hard to keep people. And it's the blanket statement. By the way, can we just? I want to throw this out here. I never want to hear. No one wants to work.
No,
I'm tired of hearing that.
I'm tired of hearing that. But that's somewhere it's force fed in the media.
Well, that's carte blanche to not deal with.
I hear it all the time.
Like the issues that you have with the three R's.
No,
that's carte blanche.
Well,
to be
people
like, I'm
people
want to
know
anything.
What to do. They want to. You know, it's not that they don't want to work. They just want to know what to do when they get there.
Yeah,
and that's where we get in this whole loosey goosey gray area at my store.
Yeah.
You know, one day they're pushing a car in the shop or they're having to jump a car out in the middle of the lot or they're pushing snow off of cars. You know, for these younger kids, you know, what did I sign up for again? You know, my boots are wet from standing outside all day.
I have how much in student loans or tool investment? Yeah. And really, you want me to do what?
And I'm a porter?
Yeah. And, you know what? You are a porter. And someday, maybe you will be the next Kenny over in the corner.
Yeah.
But... there's a distance between those two.
Faith and hope don't go nearly as far as they used to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unfortunately. All right.
Anyway,
I think we did a good job on it. And yeah. I did want to have this conversation. You know, I was a bit jealous. You did a show with Gabe and Daryl without me. So
that was a long time ago.
I'm still bitter.
That was like three times ago. By the way, congratulations, Regan. You are, I think, you're our most returning guest.
Oh my gosh!
This is the fifth time.
Five times, yes.
I think I might have to go to Alibaba and find a robe.
I think we do.
I will wear that sucker.
What's your size? Large?
Let's go for that.
All right. A Chinese large, though. Maybe a Chinese extra large.
42.
Maybe
a
Chinese. Actually, no, I got some Chinese shirts the other day. Chinese medium. They actually go the other way.
Oh.
So yeah. You're saying spring for. Don't go. Have you ever ordered anything from Wish or Alibaba?
Aiden orders from Alibaba. My son. My son is on Alibaba all the time. He got a watch with like seven faces on it the other day. He's like, look at this. And I'm like, those aren't even real. He's like, yeah, two of them work. I'm like, what's the point?
That's awesome.
He paid $2 for it.
That's not the point.
It literally looks like the band was hand-honed. Like some kid was sitting in the dirt like with a file, like making.
It says Rolex with three X's. You're like, I don't think this is legitimate. I did almost buy one. The only thing I almost bought off of, it was on Wish. It was a watch that looked like the speedometer of like a 64.5 Mustang.
Oh, hell yeah.
It had like it was cool. It was like the little, like the rally pack gauges. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, sweet. And I looked at it and I looked at all the reviews after people ordered it. And I'm like, no. Like the hands fell off.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
Speaking of reviews, if I'm the most returning guest at five times, I would love to hear what those reviews are.
I don't think we've ever had a single Regan review. And you would think with all the people, the manufacturer, and the fact that we were totally pimping out getting her lane, you know, that people would be like, oh, well, we should probably reciprocate and say how much we love other people in the regional office.
Yeah, well, last time I was on, I actually gave a shout-out to getting her lane. And yeah, nice. So I'm actually doing some side projects with them right now. I'm not going to be on their cast anytime soon, but they're doing some other stuff in their local community. Getting involved in some schools and stuff.
Good for them.
They're getting some good press, too. I just saw them on social media. They were getting some awards or something.
They're in the top 10. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say top 10, and that's not what they deserve. I think it's higher than that in iTunes for automotive industry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for them.
They're doing... I'm muddling that up. No, I'm messing up. I apologize to the crew girls at the office.
Some good recognition.
But they have some huge recognition right
awesome.
Now.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. So
did we solve all the world's problems?
No.
Well
enough.
That's the problem.
You know, at some point, we'll get to the level 6 Regan episode. You know, we're going to notch it up. We're just going to keep...
level up.
What was it from The Princess Bride where they kept notching up the pain gauge?
Oh, yeah. Just keep pressing me and getting me more... Finding more and more passionate subjects for me to talk about.
The sound of eternal pain or something like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, hopefully I didn't talk in too many circles.
I don't think so. I think we did a good job there. Because I think, like Daryl said... People have no idea, you know, how the burgers are made in the back.
Mm. No.
Well, just to finalize this, when you as a customer come in and you see a service manager like Eric, he's thinking about all the stuff we just talked about. I mean...
Day in and day out.
Yeah, he's literally worried about how complex your problem is and does he have the resources to fix it? And then once he does get it fixed, is he going to get paid for that? Especially if it's under warranty.
Right. It's like Burger Time on steroids.
I was going to say that that arcade game still haunts my nightmares.
Yes, that's a great analogy.
Yeah. Burger Time or Tapper? One of those
Tapper
two.
Is a great one, too. Yes,
just
absolutely.
Super anxiety.
Just keep running around. Yeah, that's it is, seriously.
I mean, angry customers.
You literally have to have there's a temperament that goes with it. It's crazy.
Yeah, you have one of the best temperaments that I've dealt with in the industry. I've covered literally over 100 stores in my career.
Yeah.
And probably close to 1,000 technicians.
Because I work in a small store.
In a small store,
and with the best customers in the world that I can, you know, just today, I spent like probably of my 9 hours at the store, probably 45 minutes of the day was just chatting with customers about life.
Yeah. You know?
It's actually huge. But sometimes that's all I do. I drive around. Once in a while, somebody has a problem car that I might be able to offer some technical advice. Yeah. But most of the time, I'm a therapist.
Yeah. That, honest to God, I feel like the bartender sometimes.
Yeah, me too.
Just take it in.
Like
Dr. Drew?
Are we
closing this thing?
Well,
you should.
Probably. Yeah. We're about an hour and 25 in, so.
Jesus. Man, we didn't get a moment of musk.
It's all right. It's
all right. Are we ending this podcast?
Daryl called it.
I was just playing a little musical interlude. We're talking about bartenders. One little bar music.
No, it's probably good. It's an hour and 25. We did have a moment of musk. We did have some news.
We had three people listening right now fall asleep. Wake up.
Are you serious?
Wake up. No.
I feel like this... number five might be like my most boring. You know.
I don't.
No, this was not boring at all.
You have scared the he's never coming back.
No, he'll be back.
I'll never say no. My ego won't let me, but I just hope I could be somewhat entertaining.
No, I think...
This is good. This was... You know what? We don't do enough of this, so it's fun to have the scripted shows, but this was a fun conversation amongst friends.
Oh.
Eric's like, I'm
speak
not your
for
friend.
Yourself. He's my immortal enemy. He's a manufacturer rep.
Yeah, you're
my
the only friend
is
in
to
here.
Slay the manufacturer rep every time he comes in.
Yeah, next time let's really go.
I mean, that's what I was taught when I was when I was going to service manager school. First, you screw the technicians, then you screw the manufacturer rep, then you screw the customers.
Hey,
so that's
just,
what they teach
just for
us.
That, take him to Chipotle next time you're in town. That's,
yeah, screw you. We're going. Hey, I was taught that if you're not getting thrown out of a dealer, you're not doing a good job.
Oh, that's so, a
hey,
good one too.
Touche.
I've been thrown out of nicer places than this.
How about you kick me out on Friday? We'll go to Chipotle.
I like it. That sounds like a plan. All right. Well, all right. So for a 90-minute Throwing Wrenches episode, you should be thanking us for cutting this one short. This is Eric Stahl.
I'm Daryl Scott.
And I'm Regan Bull.
Oh, he gave his last name.
You dropped it at the intro.
It's fine.
Whatever.
No, did I?
Did you? I don't know.
I don't think so.
We'll bleep it.
Yeah. There's only one of us.
I'll never bleep it.
Yeah. Witness
that
protection.
That requires post-production.
If you haven't figured it out after five times.
Just go, don't
just
go
don't him. Like him on LinkedIn.
No.
I don't have a LinkedIn.
What?
What? No.
All right. Well, we'll start with that on the next show. Anyways, info@thrownwrenches.com. Let us know. Hit us up. Let us know how we're doing.
And or Mike Fort's Toyota.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Oh. Yeah, I figured it was probably time.
Well, that's okay.
I was willing to talk. Have enough to do another show like next week.
I'm home next week.